interesting point here that Krishna Kshetra makes is an offering. The mirror should be held still, you know, so it shouldn't be waved around like a ghee lamp, you know, because when you want to look in the mirror, it has to be steady so you can see it. You know, you can move it so that the Lord can see different parts of the body, but one should only, it's not like you come up and, you know, moving it around and that makes it something special, you know, it's like, and he makes a point here is that just before how do you say? Yeah, okay. So in offering the Lord incense and other items means when he comes to this mandapa, oh, back to the throne. So he comes back to the asan, then he's received there with padyam and so on. Then he is another meal is offered. It says uttama naivedya, some very nice offering of naivedya. So Krishna Kshetra here makes point that the altar should be in good order. One should try to see that everything is nicely put there. And you don't have stuff there that shouldn't be there. You know, like so many times, the pin cushions and other weird things on the altar and that. All these things should be removed. The idea is, as we see that the worship has been finished, the blessing and all these has been finished well before the darshan artik. You know, so much so that the Lord has gone to another place, has sat there, had another offering, and all these different things. So... then we see from this, that means that if it's done a little bit ahead of time, then one is able to, one is able to nicely take the time to make the arrangements. If you finish whatever you have to finish, you know, some minutes before, then you can pleasantly go around, look, check everything, see everything's in place, and the atmosphere is very pleasant and nice. Is on deity worship.
I heard. Can I come in?
Yeah, please. So it should be pleasant and nice. The whole idea is the atmosphere shouldn't be just so rush, 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 and then someone's just as the conch is blowing, sweeping the floor, and as the person is opening the curtain, the person sweeping is just in front of that, so they just make it out. And you know, everyone's just rushed out all the doors, jumped out the windows, you know, and all these different things. So it's like that's whatever. It's full absorption, but one must understand that that's all right for those who are not so well situated in the mode of goodness. That makes them feel like something's really happening, right? But the mode of goodness is generally a little more peaceful, a little bit more regulated. So you finish, start at a certain time, finish in a certain time, and the atmosphere is very peaceful. You know, it's just like if you just before you're going to meet somebody, you like things to be very peaceful. You know, and then peaceful, and then you go. If it's just like so many things, insane things are going on, and then suddenly, bang, you know, there it is, all the, you know, the people come to see you, then it doesn't make for a very pleasant, you know, morning. So the whole idea is that one should try to finish, it should be peaceful, everything's ready, the Lord has a few minutes just to sit and relax before opening and all these kind of things, you know? So that's the idea here, is you finished everything there, you know, he goes to a place, sits, receives, relaxes a little bit, that, everything's ready there on the altar and all, he comes back, he's received there, another nice offering is made, and then he finishes that pleasantly, and then it's open for darshan, like that. That's the whole idea. It should be very pleasant, nice, and all these kind of things. That's the mood in which it is being done. So now he gives some ideas here. according for the whole altar arrangement. Krishna Kshetra is writing here. The Simhasan, or altar, may vary in shape and size depending on the number and types of deities and the size of the deity room. Since the Simhasana is the Lord's asana, or the place of activity, it should be attractive and kept absolutely clean. If the Simhasana has a roof, you should regularly clean the top. If there is no roof, there should at least be an umbrella or some type of cloth canopy above the deities. There should be some arrangement for retiring the deities from public view. If the temple room is too small to accommodate a separate deity room with doors, you may hang a curtain to serve this purpose. If the temple room is too small even for that, the curtain may be integrated into the design of the Simhasana. In this regard, Srila Prabhupada writes, the altar should be made with curtain, that it may be closed when Krishna and Radha are taking rest. Letter from Srila Prabhupada, 6th May, 1968. The altar should have pictures of the Guru Parampara, beginning with our founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada. And then, when Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji, Srila Bhaktivinod Thakur, preferably Jagannath Das Babaji, and the six Goswamis should also be included. The deity room has more than one altar. The Guru Parampara pictures need be only on one altar. A picture of Lord Nrisimhadev, as well as a picture of the Panchatattva, should also be present. A picture of the Guru of the Pujari, who is worshipping the deity, must be on the altar during puja. After completing the worship, the Pujari should place the picture to the side, out of public view. This, of course, does not apply to Srila Prabhupada's disciples. On festival days, an appropriate picture commemorating the occasion may be placed on the altar or a table arrangement next to the altar. For example, a picture of Ramanujacharya or Madhvacharya may be displayed on their appearance days, or a picture of Varahadev on Varaha Mahadvadasi. You may decorate the altar with wooden, metal, or clay ornamental figurines of auspicious animals like cows, peacocks, and elephants. There may be a decorative cloth or painted backdrop hanging behind the deities, appropriate to the decorating scheme of the day. Srila Prabhupada's books, The Literary Incarnations of Godhead, may also be displayed on the altar. One or more tulsi plants should be present, either on or next to the altar on a stand, at least during the Darshan Artik. If a clock is placed on the altar for the pujari, it should not be overly visible to the public. Near each deity on the altar should be a cup of drinking water with a metal or cloth cover. What's important is that the cup should always have covers, because if water is not covered, then it collects all kinds of dust and other things. Prabhupada said an uncovered water pot means disease. He mentioned that, I think, very early in India. So that should be there.
Talk about those animal figurines. You mentioned cows, elephants.
Say peacocks. Yeah.
Any other animal?
Lions. It would probably be any. I would think figurines. You wouldn't put lions. They may be built into the asan. Mm. You know, as a like that. Like generally, it's called a simhasana because it has the lion's feet. And then sometimes they may put lions built into the you know, the columns or in the signs and all that. But as far as animals, I wouldn't think. Generally, it would be more pleasant, auspicious animals like that, more peaceful, you know, like that. Like in Vrindavan, you have lions on Prabhupada's altar, but they're built in. I mean, on his simhasan, but they're built in. But otherwise, generally, you see it's more like, you know, that peacocks, parrots, than cows. Cows is very common. That's like in Krishna Balaram, they have cows. Hirada Madhava has cow and calf. They've always had cow and calf.
Those are not considered installed or anything?
No, no. They're just there for...
They're decorative.
They're decorative, yeah.
Even when it's Surabi
cows. That you can also, one should be respectful. One should be careful. One shouldn't deal with them just as, you know, a vase or something. You know, especially like cows. One should be very careful. But it's just Krishna in his pastime. The cows are there, the peacocks are there, the parrots are there, you know. even deer. He has his pet deer and like that. I think in Bombay and in Chopati, then they have deer.
Monkeys.
Even they have a few monkeys. You know, as long as the monkeys don't make trouble, then it's okay.
Monkeys where?
In Chopati, they have a few monkeys also.
Real monkeys?
No. They made a whole scene there.
Oh really?
Yeah. You never seen?
No.
They have peacocks sitting and parrots, and it's all over. It's not like a symmetrical kind of arrangement. They're all over the place, so it's like a more like a forest scene.
Oh.
It's very 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 nice arrangement. They put like a little garden in the front.
You know, so there's no hard and fast rules really.
Not really. Main thing is to be pleasant, nice, clean, like that. And you know, things that make auspicious, you know, you can put different plants and trees or in the back, like you mentioned, the backdrops. The backdrops can have different scenes or nice colors, or also have trees and animals, or depict different pastimes. Like sometimes you see backdrops of Panchatattva and then there's a whole kirtan party there, or you have, you know, Radha and Krishna, and then they have kadamba trees and parrots in the trees, and you know, so something to just make nice and pleasant like that. I think in Govindaji, he has his one outfit where the back of the altar is a big cow. I mean, very big cow. Cow comes like up to his waist or more. Big silver cow. Huge cow. You know, it must
in
be
Govindaji where?
In Jaipur. You know, it must be a few, like 3 feet long or 4 feet long, the cow. Big cow.
Radha Raman has elephants.
Radha Raman has elephants. Huh?
I don't know the question. It's not 100% related, really. If I can ask.
Yeah, well, why not?
Because recently in the BTG there was an article about pets.
Oh, yes.
And somehow it sparked a huge discussion, which is still going on after months.
Still?
Yeah. Still people are writing letters about that. So I just, if you could comment on that, animal, pet animals, and especially in relation to, because it's written in those books, I think by the Goswamis, how Srimati Radharani has that pet elephant, pet dog also.
No pet dog.
Dog.
Not Radharani. Krishna has. Krishna. But Radharani, but someone explained that those, the closest thing you can explain them is dogs are here, but they're not dogs like here. They're kind of something else. The closest you get kind of here is dogs, you know, but they don't behave like the dogs here. You know, they're not walking around passing urine on anything vertical and, you know, stuff like that.
So if you could explain both things, like in the material world and the spiritual world.
Well, you'll see that these pets are, the pastimes of the pets are happening outside. And from what I see is, except for the parrots, then they're not touching the animals. I haven't heard, I've only heard of Krishna,
Radha. In the spiritual world.
Yeah, in the spiritual world. The only I've ever heard that they actually touched the pets, you know, of the deer or the peacocks or like this, or the monkeys, is the parrots. And parrots would come down and sit there, and then after speaking all kinds of eloquent Sanskrit poetry and descriptions, then they would feed them either grapes or pomegranate seeds and all that. But one must note that the parrot was speaking in Sanskrit. Like that. So that's an essential point to note. They would be there, but you wouldn't hear of them inside the house and things like that. No, the animals stay outside. Just like when Krishna goes into the forest of Vrindavan, then, you know, goes with the cows and all the others and all these there. And then when he comes back, the cows go into the cowshed. And all the animals of the Vrindavan forest, they also, as Krishna's coming back from the forest, they come with him. And they all sit in the trees and the bushes all around Vrindavan at the gate where they'll come out the next morning, just waiting there. So they sleep the night there. But they actually don't come into the Vrindavan town like that. They wait outside the gate, you know. And like that. So the Prabhupada gives the thing is that in the Vedic culture is that sometimes the grihasthas they might have, especially if they're living in a rural environment, there may be animals and all that just kind of like happen there. You don't go down to the shop and buy them. Dogs just come along and cats come along and these kind of things. But they live outside, they never come inside. Like that. They just don't come inside. It means those things that live inside, like that, they might take care of them, They call it snakes might live somewhere or something, this and that. It says Grihastha takes care of everybody. But the mood is different because you know that they're dirty. There's a pastime with Lord Chaitanya and some puppies. I think he was very small, like 3 years old or something, just big enough to walk around and just talk and all that. So then he found some puppy on the road or something, and he picked it up and brought it home. Mother Yashoda saw this. Sachimata saw this. Immediately kicked the dog out and took Nimai down to the Ganga for a bath, I think with his clothes on, Like that, because as Brahmins, you just don't touch animals like that, because you're doing puja, animals are very dirty, they talk about how cats are clean, but they're clean because they lick themselves from head to foot. And it's not like they, brush their teeth after eating the mice and all that. So they, when they're licking themselves, it's not exactly pure, So they're not a clean animal. Also, cats are like very considered inauspicious, because ghosts like to move with them, stay with them. And depending on how they move, it's like if they move across your path from left to right, if you're going somewhere, then whatever you're going to do is not going to happen. It just kind of like doesn't work. So they're considered inauspicious like that. I mean, the Egyptians liked them, considered them very auspicious, but they didn't last too long, because they also followed another interesting principle of brother and sister marrying each other. So they kind of like finished off their dynasty by this system. So it's not, that aspect is there. So they would be outside, they might be fed, this and that, others might take, but Brahmins especially wouldn't touch them and deal with them and all that. It's generally, one is very careful like that. Then so Mother Yashoda took him down and bathed him. Then he went back and I guess he went out again and found the puppy and all that, and brought him again back in, and Mother Sachimata threw him out again and took him again for a bath like this. Happened a few times. And then I forget what happened. Is that then the dog then because he kept going out, then Mother Sachimata kept Nimai inside, wouldn't let him out. So then this dog was just then wandering down the road chanting Hare Krishna and all that, and it went to the next village and was chanting and doing kirtan and all that, and then it left its body, I think took four arms and went back to Godhead like that. So we see from this that Lord Chaitanya benefited, was his devotee, must have been in an unfortunate situation or something, and so he freed him from that. But we can see from the culture that Sachimata herself didn't approve of her young child playing with dogs like that. So it's natural for kids to want to play with animals, because according to the Vedas, then the first birth is animal birth, so they work pretty much on the same wavelength. So it's only till second birth, then they take human. When they actually take up seriously Krishna consciousness, then they come to the human platform. So as kids, another thing is you see what are the pets in the Vedic culture, and you generally see there are animals that are much more controlled by the mode of goodness.
In the Vedic culture, pet animals.
Yeah, ones that you may deal with, like elephants would be dealt with. They're much more controlled by goodness. You see, they hardly sleep. They love to be clean. They want to take a bath every day. They love playing in the water and all that. And they develop very deep kind of relationships and all that. They know the people and all these kind of things. Parrots, cockatoos, You know, they're, you know, they're much more, you see more sattvic. The qualities are finer, the movement's very gentle. Like that. Well, you see like cats and dogs, which is the standard, you know, Western pets are very, very ignorant. And cats are exceedingly proud.
Mm.
Very proud. It means, see, a dog lives in your house. A cat, you live in their house. It's a very different mood between the cats and dogs. Cats are, you know, they don't have much, you don't see much good qualities. Chanakya doesn't mention cats for anything. You know? Dogs, you mention at least, you know, the things they're satisfied with what you give them and this and that. But they live outside, they're satisfied to live outside also. So those things are.
Thank you.
You know? Like that. They're fine points, but they would deal with them outside. You know, you don't hear about them much in Vedic culture. Because the forest would be natural and that you can see them outside. You know? You don't have to play with them. The point is nowadays the relationships between people is not very deep. So the Prabhupada mentions because of that then they turn to animals for trying to get some, you know. You know, like the man's in the house, the children don't listen to him, you know, wife's not listening and or the fighting and all these different things, but he can depend upon his dog, you know. His dog's always there when he's there, and he can throw a stick and he'll run after it, and always be there with him, and happy with whatever he gives him, and, you know, like that. So then, man's best friend is his dog, you know. You know? But like that, but it's just because the relationships don't go deep. Like that. So therefore, you don't find in the Vedic culture that dog is considered man's best friend. You know, no, other humans are, you know, the relationships, the emotional exchange is between other humans, you know, other humans, yourself and God, like that. So the relationships between husband and wife, the family members, all that is much deeper. You know, it's actually because of prescribed duties, it's established on an emotional platform. Well, if there's no prescribed duties, it's not. It's you know, just a convenient arrangement, or it's based on the senses. You know? So without following prescribed duties, then it doesn't function. Can't function. On an emotion, a pure, I mean, what is not a pure, but a solid emotional platform. And then because of that, there's dissatisfaction. So in the West, they turn to animals. You know, animals, you know, drugs, alcohol, crazy sports, you know, stuff like that. You see, in the Vedic culture, means only the Kshatriyas would kind of get into more passionate sports. You know, they do their martial arts training, or, you know, riding their horses and chariots and these kind of things. But it had a purpose, is they could defend the country by that. But Brahmins, the others, didn't bother so much with these things. You know, no time, no interest. Vaishyas are busy making money. Why waste your time with some sports? Shudras are busy doing their art. Why would they? That the art is their happiness. Brahmins have other things to do. Like that. You know, eating and talking is their sports. You know. It's just a matter of, you know, they'll say, well, how do they get in touch with nature and all this? But, you know, as long as dogs and cats are the only thing in nature worth getting in touch with, and trees and plants are not also nature, if one is so worried about nature, one can also go out to a rural environment, you know? But the problem is, you know, only the kid wants to get in touch with nature. The parents want to get in touch with money. So you don't get that out in the rural unless you want to grow potatoes. But then the problem is the parents have to get very much in touch with nature, like growing them, put their hands in the dirt, and they don't want to do that. Rather just get on a, you know, train or a subway and go to work and do their 9 to 5 and then come back and like that. So see, it's just a matter of the standards of purity. If you don't value purity, or even sometimes cleanliness. I mean, you keep cats and dogs, you got hairs all over the house, you got fleas, you got all kinds of wonderful things, you know. Come in, the dogs lick, you know, and it's like pretty wild, you know. Cats bring home their latest prize, you know, half a bird or half a rat, and you know, all these kind of things. So it doesn't make for a very clean environment, and purity you can just kiss goodbye, you know. So it's one has, these things are there, but they have their place. You know, everything has their place, you know. Just like certain things you keep in the kitchen, not in the toilet. Right? You don't keep your mixing bowls and your oven in the toilet. You know, no one would think that's good. The same way in the Vedic cultures, you have your animals, but they stay outside. You wouldn't have them in your house. You know? So it's just a matter of your standards of cleanliness and purity, what you value. You know? Parrots and that's okay. You see them in the house, that's not a big problem.
They're not considered...
I don't think anybody's going to complain about parrots, neither side. But the point is generally they're in the, you know, cats and dogs. Like that. Fish, okay, fish is there. See, there's so many things, but it comes down to just cats and dogs. Yeah, like you mentioned fish. You go to Malaysia and they keep birds. You know, storks and these other things. Like in Malaysia, they don't keep, I think it's Malaysia or Indonesia, they don't keep watch dogs. Because dogs you can do things to. You know, you can sidetrack them. You know, they have ways how they can sidetrack dogs, but birds you can't. You know, birds are very sharp and very, how do you say?
Alert?
Yeah, very alert, you know. You see, the birds are always watching what's going on, you know. You come near birds and they're always kind of like, what's going on here, you know. So they keep birds for security. You know, all these storks and other things like that. So, I mean, different places you go, they keep different animals. But, you know, Americans, English and that, they keep, you know, Europeans, they keep cats and dogs. So generally the main fight is over cats and dogs. But some keep rabbits or guinea pigs.
Hamsters.
Hamsters, same thing. Hamsters, I think, a short guinea pig.
Leopards on their palace as guards.
Leopards, okay. You can keep leopards. You want to keep a cat, leopard, you know. Why you keep these...
Also, reptiles are becoming
snakes.
Yeah, but this is like, now you're starting to drop down even from the kind of...
from the mammals.
Yeah, you know, the mammal species, you know. It's like, one understands is one can kind of see the values of the culture by also these things, how... Because you relate. You see in the past that people would relate more with mammals, you know, and the colors they would wear, the kind of cloth they would wear, and all these would be more like, a bit more like mammals, like that. But like nowadays, they look more like bugs and reptiles, you know.
Some people
keep insects. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you get these big beetles, and they have them all like on a little chain or something like that, and keep them, they crawl around, you know.
Oh, yeah, but in Australia, it was a fed.
Yeah.
You got this huge...
some kind of bug on a chain, yeah. And it would crawl around your neck, over your head, and all that. You're talking to somebody, and this bug walking around. I mean, you gotta be... You know, it's interesting. But the whole idea is that... If the animals that one would keep, once they have, there should be qualities you can gain from them. You know, gentleness and all these different things. But there's a limit on the association. You know, cows can stay in the cow shed. Like that. You may go out and, you know, pet them and things like that, but that's there. But cows are clean, they're pure. So they're basically the only one that you really deal with. You know? Elephant then for big royal occasions and stuff like that. You know? Horses, the Kshatriyas would deal with ride and, you know, for battle and all these different things. But otherwise, your main things that where the humans would get very close with generally are the whole parrot family. They're the ones that they can kind of relate more and all that. You know? Because before it was an art, you knew the language. You could understand what they're talking about and stuff like that. It's mentioned in the Krishna books, one of the 64 arts, to know the language of the cockatoos and parrots, so they could understand what they were saying, like that, because they can relate to the humans somehow or another more. So, in other words, those who are interested in puja, then.
You heard about
it. He says, you talking about this? It's interesting. You go to Nepal, there's a different word that they use. You say hut, they don't understand. I forget what it is. Someone told me once. They use a different word. You have to use that word for those dogs. You know, Indian dogs is hut. Like that. Yeah. Also, elephants is the language that they deal with them, or the cows. You know, there's certain sounds they make and this and that, and they can relate to them. They understand what you're talking about. And
I had one thing in Vrindavan, they went on Parikram. A big dog came on barking, and one devotee tried to chase it away. And then after the devotee, I felt like
dog, yeah. Yeah, the mood. Yeah, I think it was.
There's a German guy on the beach, and this German shepherd came. And Prabhupada said hut, and lifted his stick, and the dog had gone away, but then it came back. And then Prabhupada walked on, and then this devotee tried it, and it tried to attack it.
Well, you have to be convinced when you say. You can tell whether the hut that you say is convincing, or whether you're.
Can I ask last thing on the animal?
Sure.
What about dolphins? How they are considered?
Dolphins?
They're like mammals, actually.
I'm not sure. I mean,
according to the
Western modern is, but the Vedic, they classify animals a little differently.
Yeah.
Like they go by five toes, split hoof, single hoof. They do like that. So you end up, you know, elephants, you know, dogs, cats. Those will all be in one group. You know, like that. Well, then you're, you know, pigs, goats, and these other, you know, they have the split hoof, and then the horses with a single hoof, and like that. I'm not sure how that would. They would just be counted as aquatics, you know, in the main thing. But within that, then, you know, you may. If you want to categorize them according to how they eat, sleep, mate, and defend, then, you know, the mammal category seems to work quite
because
well.
Because they also have often very close relation with humans, and I consider very intelligent. There's nothing like.
I haven't heard of anything because there's not a whole lot of. Bhagavatam doesn't get so much into it, you know. Because their experience and all that. What's that?
You're sick.
Who?
You.
Is that you?
Huh?
I don't know, we could check more into it. I haven't heard much because there's no real pastimes with the animals. I mean, with the fish and all that. You know? Ramachandra is like the one who deals the closest, like we're getting into, you know, a broader species of animals. You know, the vanaras, the bears and the monkeys. But then they were vanaras, so they all speaking Sanskrit, you know. They all follow the Vedic culture and all that. They also had the other, I think, ordinary monkeys and all that were there also. Both were there. Vanaras are like halfway, they're like half human, half animal. So they follow the, you know, they follow the language and culture, basically, the humans. No, it's a little simpler. The only thing of the aquatics was this, I think when they're going across the bridge, then Jambavan, because the monkeys were very amazed by the water and the waves and the big fish and the whales, and they saw a whale and thought, wow, that's really big. And he says, oh, that's nothing. So he reached down into the ocean, you know, reached around and until he found, I think, you know, something really big, and he pulled it up just for a moment, and then all of the hairs in the body and coiled in little places, and whales were living inside there. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. I'd like to do the whole thing. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. We've all come from Calcutta. Very nice. Hare Krishna. We're having a class on deity worship, on Archan. Said we're having a class on deity worship now. You know, Pancharatra. Pancharatra here.
Can we attend? No.
If you like, you can sit down. But it's in English. The point is see it, the difficulty is something goes on for months as long as you're discussing detail. And or you're dealing with speculation. But if you deal with principles and philosophy, then these kind of discussions naturally become a little shorter. Because the point is does one value cleanliness or not? I mean, it's always put out, well, it's important for the children to see other life and this and that. They also have family members. They can relate to their parents nicely and all that. It's not that by relating to the dog nicely, you relate to the parents nicely. If you can relate to the parents nicely, you can relate to the dog nicely. You know, so brothers and sisters, you know. It doesn't mean anything. Brothers and sisters fight like cats and dogs, and then they have nice relationship with their pet cats and dogs. You know, that doesn't... So the whole point is do we value proper emotional exchange? Do we value cleanliness and purity? You know, like that. And even we say we deal with animals, what quality, what modes are they controlled by? You know? Like that. It means all animals, the soul is in ignorance. Like that. But their bodies and minds and intelligence, how they act, is controlled by different modes. Like cows are controlled by goodness. You know, monkeys by ignorance. The lions and that by passion. So like that. So all the animals are all controlled by different modes. So we see like of the birds and like the parrots and that are the most sattvic. Like that. So then these kind of dealings, you know, can go. One has to see that also. And then even you dealing with these animals, then to what degree, how intimate you're getting with them, how you're keeping them, how close, under what situations you're getting close with them. Like that. So you can't be close with the cat and then go into the kitchen and cook for the deities. You know? I mean, cats are very dirty. You know? Like that. So it's and dogs and all they're dirty. So if you touch them, you need to take a bath. That means the clothes you're wearing need to be washed. So if you value cleanliness for puja, if you're going out into the field like that and, you know, you pat a dog on the head, big deal, as long as you're going back and washing your clothes and taking a bath and all that. But if you're in a clean environment and maintaining standards of cleanliness, then it doesn't fly. You know, just because as malechas and yavanas we used to keep, that doesn't mean that when one comes to the human platform that same standard goes. So it's a matter of what is the culture you accept to you follow. Because if it's a Western culture, then the problem with that is there were many anomalies to that, and that's why we were looking for some answers to our questions. Why I'm doing all these things, I'm not satisfied. So we were looking for answers. And we find those answers in the Vedic literatures. Now, if we then try just revert back, then that's not so good. Or if one does, fine. But then one should understand the position and be satisfied. why I need to write 3 months worth of articles. You know, okay, we don't mind living in a house with, you know, dogs and fleas and hares. And, you know, we're not doing any puja and things like that. And we're not maintaining a high standard of cleanliness. Fine. And others who want to, fine. You know? So, you know, the discussion can end there. But to try to put it into some lofty ideals, you know, the kids learn about nature and life, and what do they learn? You know? What is it that they're learning? They can learn these things, how to deal. Nature's is life. Life means, so if it's the festival of life, that's pranamoy. You know, that's a saurya. A worship.
Saurya?
Saurya. It's a worshiper of the sun god. Saurya is the sun. So the Sauryas are those who worship the sun. It means they worship life. So if that's the platform that we want to worship on, then yes, okay, by the animals and the bugs and the trees and the sun and, you know, others and the festival of life and expressing and appreciating life and living, then yes, then that may be a nice way to train the children. You know? Like that. But if our whole point is that is Vaishnav, serving and pleasing Krishna, then we have to look at what pleases Krishna. The reason we don't touch is because you get dirty, and Krishna doesn't like people that are dirty coming and cooking for him and doing his puja or, you know, doing these things. Krishna likes things very clean. So it's a matter of who sets the rules. It means Krishna set the rules. You want to be a Saurya? Okay, maybe it's not so bad. Though you can't go in and worship the sun god. But if you just want to worship life, okay, you know, fine. That's okay. It's a level. It's a platform. It's an accepted, you know, Vedic platform of just worship of life. You know, it's called pranamoy. Pran, life. But then one should not try to compare that with anandamoy, which is the transcendental. Or you should not try to compare it with the platform of prescribed duties. You know, the manamoy, in which the social... The you know, the social customs based on the laws of God are situated on. Like that. So then one has to be careful. Maybe they should keep sheep because they have wool and wool's pure.
In the house.
Yeah. But you say, if I say that, everyone will laugh and think you're crazy. But what's the difference between a sheep and a dog? Why, what's the, you know, they're about the same size, some of them. But why dogs are acceptable but sheep is not? Right? You know what I'm saying? Because that's just the European, you know, the white man's conception of what's a pet. You know? I mean, you go to the Middle East, I'm sure that there are many kids who are, you know, have their pet sheep because, you know, the father's got thousands of them. You know?
What do you think of proposing a law that no animal should stay in the ISKCON temple premises? I mean, or at least inside. We don't have such a law, isn't it?
No, I don't think it's... I don't know. I really don't know, because I think there was something about cats keeping away mice and things like that. And I'm not sure.
From where? From?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure how it worked, but I remember somebody saying something about Prabhupada mentioning that, because they were talking about poisoning them and like that. But at the same time, then someone's mentioned about getting a cat, and I think, and one thing I saw, Prabhupada didn't like that either. His point is if the place is clean, there are no mice and rats, you know, cockroaches, all this, because it's dirty, therefore. So you're keeping the place dirty, and then you're trying to, you know, it's like that, the example of the sadhu and the mouse. You know, you get rid of the mouse and you get the cat, then you gotta keep the cat, you gotta get a cow to give the milk to keep the cow, then you gotta have to have a wife, and then the wife needs a house and all these different things, and then, you know, then you have so many things, and then the, you know, so many difficulties and the bandits and the this and that, and things get so crazy, then the guy just grabs his copens and tells the mouse, let's go. And they go back to the forest.
With the mouse.
Yeah, it says the mouse was better than the whole rest of the whole insanity. In other words, simple is better. Simple, clean, place is more clean, then there's less difficulty with these things. You know? The cats live outside, this and that, or the dogs live outside. That's, you know, like here, we've had sometimes cats will come around and be here, and you know, like down in the fields, this year they didn't grow, but in previous years they would grow rice in the fields. So then that means then all the field rats would come, you know. And then when the rainy season comes, then the rats would move up to the high ground because that all floods out there. So then you can end up with a lot of these field rats digging holes and, you know, and everything and all. So then the cats, then they like to catch the rats. You know? So then when there's an abundance of them, then they all come around. You know, the cats come in and eat all the rats, and there's no more rats, and the cats move on. You know, it's nothing to do with us. They're just living out there. We don't really deal with them much. It'd be interesting to see more about it. You know, but otherwise, it's like Chanakya mentioned in the city. If that place where the city is, there's no river. There's no river. There's the black buck doesn't roam. He mentions something else, I forget. There's no sadhus. Hare Krishna. There's no sadhus, I think. No river. And black bucks aren't there, then that place isn't worth living. Like that. So these kind of things would be around. Yeah. In the ashrams, they'd definitely be all kinds of animals. Like that. But they'd live outside. They wouldn't live in the houses. You know, deer would come around and, you know, all kinds of things.
If it unfortunately happens, let's say they get, someone get damaged or broken, what should we do with them?
Never thought about that. Huh? What to do with damaged altar animals? I know that sounds like a question for Krishna Kshetra.
Depends also what they're made of. It's like ivory figurines. And
Yeah. Yeah, it depends on what they're made out of, I would guess.
Marble?
I don't know, glue them back together?
You don't find that broken part?
I was telling Krishna Kshetra when I was there in Europe, he said that there's certain questions and problems that come up in the Western mind that I have no answers to. Absolutely none. You know, it's like, you don't think about that. You know, it's just, it never, certain these kind of things just don't happen here, you know, in India. I don't know why. Things are different, but I don't know.
I have got those little cows on the altar. One of the boys dropped down on the floor and was moving my baby. The horn and the crown broke off of the cow. In order to make a new one, then put in someone else, the old one.
You can put in the Ganga, why not? Or you can bury, they bury cows.
You can find the horn, get rid of
it. Yeah, if you can find, you can glue it on. But otherwise, I don't know. Anything more on animals?
Did they have any of this in the Vedic tradition? Did they have any of these robot animals?
Robot means you wind them up and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, like sort of. I think
I don't think there's anything mechanical animals, but I've seen in. You see in sometimes the Rajasthani paintings and the South Indian paintings, and I've also seen in, I think, Rajasthani Gujarati houses, those who are the Balabas, I think it's Balabas or Nimbarkas. No, Balabas. They worship Krishna as a baby, you know, Bal Krishna. And I've seen that they'll have, you know, a big like swing, julan for a little dinky deity. You know, the deity may be 2-3 inches high. They'll have this big julan that's, you know, three, four feet high and a big thing. Yeah, almost. Not quite, but almost. And that, and they'll have the deity on there nicely. And then all in front of them, like for spread, maybe, you know, 3 to 5, 6 feet in front of him. Then, you know, you'll have, you know, trays with fruits and things on them, and you'll have all kinds of interesting little, like parrots, but on wheels. You know, it's a parrot, but it's where the feet are, they have a little axle with wheels on it. You know, you can push them around, and all different little things like that, little play things and rattles and different stuff like this, all made out of silver. You know, I've seen, and that's in this. So that get into these kind of things.
If I'm not mistaken, now I'm thinking of it. I think in Kardama Muni's palace, he had this fake birds and things.
May have.
You can check. Do you have any
I mean, it's nice. You see, in many the old Vedic architecture, many times animals were very much part of the architecture. Like in South, they always have these, I think they're called yalis. They're a kind of lion. They only have them in the first three yugas. You don't have them in Kali Yuga. It's a lion with an elephant's nose. Like that. They're very ferocious. Like that. They only eat elephants. They don't eat anything else. You know, they don't bother with zebras and other stuff like this. They only eat elephants. They're big. I think they're very big, so elephants are, you know, quite a, you know, it's just an easy, a nice meal for them. But you see them on all the South Indian temples, on the pillars a lot. Pillars are holding up the roofs, because, you know, you have the rain kind of a shade hanging down. You have the pillar holding the roof, and then from that point, then the rain shade comes, and sometimes they stick out. You know, and they're always standing with their hands kind of held chest high, like this, and their nose going down. Like that, and you know, people riding horses, and you know, all these figurines of all the different. Generally, they have these all the different planetary systems. They show, you know, up higher is all the upper planetary systems, or Vishnu Lila, and then farther down Devas and Gandharvas, and then humans, and then the Asuras, and then the animals, and like this. So they show all these, like in the columns and then the walls, and so they were very much part of. You know, it's very natural to, you know, you can relate to those things very nicely. So the whole thing is to invoke. You want to invoke the whole understanding of the whole total picture, the whole cosmic picture. The whole thing is personal. The personal conception means all the elements, all the different, you know, whatever, means the material elements, all the different situations, everything is being controlled by people. So you have all your devatas and all your different levels of personalities. And so all these things bring it out, so then they may put all these different kinds of figurines and carvings all over, because it brings out that understanding. So anything that they would be dealing, there would be much higher levels of this. Like you're dealing even with the animals, and there's shastras on how to deal with them. You know, it means according to the shastra, you build the stable for the elephant, the stable for the horse. Like the shastras say, the stable must be, the roof must be, the rafters must be higher than when an elephant lifts up its trunk. It can't touch the rafters. You know, and it must be a certain amount of size, and it must be, have a certain kind of drainage, and it must drain out towards the back. Can't drain forward. You know, it doesn't drain to the side, must drain backwards. And so the Shastras give all these things, even on the dealing with the animals that they deal. How you deal with the cows, how you just use the medicines for them. And the Ayurveda deals with medicines for the animals. You know, the Shastras on training the animals, how to understand the Lakshanas. You want to know what an elephant's good for. You know, is it a work elephant, is it a war elephant, it's a temple elephant, it's a, you know, useless elephant, or, you know, whatever it is. Then they have Lakshanas, they have signs that you can see. And then they will decide. So even they were dealing with animals or dealing with all these figurines, it was all would connect one to the cosmic order, but to the Shastras. And then that, if one had the association of devotees, that would connect one to the spiritual realm. So it was always giving a much bigger picture. So it wasn't just a selfish thing, there was more beyond it. The point is Shastras don't deal with, you know, cats and dogs and other things like that. So generally one doesn't deal with them so much. You know, it's just like even, you know, tik-tikis, there's Shastras on tik-tikis. You know, you don't keep them as pets, they're always there. You know, they eat bugs and stuff like that. But there's Shastras on understanding what kind of tik-tiki they are, what varna they are, and then how they tick, what it means. And these different things, what direction, how many times they tick. So you can do a whole, there's a whole astrological science just based on the tik-tikis. So like that is even our connection with the animals then is through Shastra. You know, the Kshatriyas go out, they would hunt the animals, you know, but only certain animals. You know, you couldn't just hunt any animal. You know, they wouldn't go out and hunt elephants and kill elephants. You know, they could fight with tigers and like that, but they had to kill them with their own hands. They didn't go out with a gun and or bow and arrow and kill them. That they had to kill because they were like of the royal order. Of animals, they're the royal order. So we're the royal order of humans, so we fight. They have, so amongst you know, the kings, then you only fight with equal weaponry. So the lion only has his claws. So therefore the Kshatriya would only go out with these special kind of hand knife. You seen those knives?
Hand knife?
Yeah, they're special knife. They're what they call now push knives. But nowadays they have real small ones. You know, they're only a little bit long. The Kshatriyas have ones. They're like the blade is 9 to 12 inches long. And you have a bar that goes through your hand that you hold on to, and the blade comes out through the fingers. And you have some guards on the sides of the hand that give some you know, strength in the wrist, because the whole thing is a lion or a tiger, you know, they weigh some hundreds of kilos. So the Kshatriya would keep two of those, one for each hand, and that's how he would go out hunting tigers or lions. So you find the lion, and then you get there in front of it, and you let it know that you're not just walking by, but it's, you know, you're, this is a fight. So then, at one point, then the lion or tiger will pounce. So when it pounces, because you're standing, it'll pounce to get on top of you. So then the Kshatriya will go down on one knee and go below the lion, and then with those daggers, and he'll stab through the chest. So he has to be able to carry the weight of the tiger or lion over his head. So that's where the wrist things and all that.
For stability.
Yeah, like that. So that's how they would kill them. So that's the rules on it. You couldn't just go out there and just shoot them without challenging. Because a lion does not chase. Like a tiger, you'll see, they'll just hide and pounce. Lions don't do that. They find an animal that they're going to attack, they first roar, right? Then they chase, because there's some Kshatriya spirit there. Yeah. So it's like, it's not really fair if they didn't know you were coming. You know? So like that. You know, they have their tricks. But there's, you know, they let them know they're there. And then it's a matter of, you know, one on one, or, you know, your, how you say, strategy. You know, sometimes one lion will roar on one side, the animals will run the other side, and there'll be, you know, other, they say, lions that work together, friends, will be on the other side, you know, like that. But they first let them know that they're there, like that. So whole idea is the kshatriya will deal in the same way. It's not just that. Other animals are just, all they're doing is because they run and speed, and so they have to be able to shoot and hit accurately at a moving target. So when they're fighting in battle, you know, the target, the other kshatriyas and other warriors will be moving. So they have to be able to hit moving targets. Therefore, they'll go out and shoot the animals like that. But they can only shoot certain animals. Can't shoot just any animals.
What are these gavayas we hear about?
I'm not sure. I think they're one kind of antelope, I think. You know, something big, because they're all fast. You know, I mean, I don't know, but I would doubt that they go out shooting porcupines or something. You know, it's like, you know, that they don't move very fast. So it's generally fast-moving animals, very fast. So they would generally go for tigers. One just, you know, was just the nature of kshatriya sport. But specifically, if they were, there were too many. It means if the lions or tigers get too many in a forest, it's dangerous for the sages living there. You know, because there's too many, then they kind of move around and get too close to the ashrams. So they would go in and keep thin down the tigers and all that. But they would do it by that method.
Then the animals were offered to somebody?
It depends. They might, depends upon what they were doing. But they might be. They could be offered in sacrifice and these kind of things. But these are all karmakanda stuff. And then they would take some of the meat from that animal and that. But that wasn't that they were taking it just for enjoying or this or that. It was because you killed, you do the sacrifice, they're offered in the sacrifice. then they're elevated to human birth. Like that. So the karma, so that karma between their animal life to human birth, because there's some karma that keeps them from being human. So that karma has to be taken by somebody. So by taking the meat, then you get the karma. It's transferred through the meat. Like that. So, you know, when there is a downside to these things. So those who are following these paths, then they may do these things. Yeah. But in the Vaishnava tradition, then those things aren't done. Any more questions on animals? Seems to be today's animal topic.
Well, once Matatva was giving a class, the old story about this South Indian king, that he was so elevated that the devotees, somehow even Ramachandra Lakshman appeared personally to him. But then at one point he had to go to jail for some time, and then the whole explanation was that he had to go to jail because for some time he kept parrots in cage.
Really? That's interesting. I never heard of that.
You never heard that?
Yeah. That's interesting.
But I assume he would have, no, also talk to you about that. I don't know if
no.
You never heard that.
No, I never heard.
I remember. Anybody else remembers? Was here when Atmatatva gave this story? It was maybe 3 years ago when he gave that series of stories in our library.
I don't remember. I just remember the one where he's telling the Ramayana Mahabharata here.
Like that created a very deep impression in me, and then I'm keeping.
Yeah. No, it'd be interesting to know what was the thing on that. Because zoology is one of the arts.
Which one?
Zoology is one of the arts that the gopis know.
You know? Zoology, knowing animals.
Yeah, knowing animals, keeping animals, training animals, like that.
Like animal husbandry.
Yeah, tools, like that. Check into that.
Mm-hmm.
Said we'll have to check into that.
Did they have zoos or things like that in the cities or other nations?
I'm not sure.
Keeping fancy.
I'm not exactly. I mean, definitely cows. They have their area, you know, and these and horses. You have to keep in stables, yeah. Elephant stables. So the whole thing of keeping them is there, but you know, there's generally the thing of that there's some freedom of movement, they can get out, move around also. So the whole thing is, you know, like you could get in cities, people keep cows and they're just kept in the house and you can't go out in the city, so the cow just stays in that, you know, in like in the shed in the house the whole time. And so there is that aspect of keeping animals, you know, cows, elephants, horses, like that.
But not just, I mean, I was saying just like they have in the West, just that you look and watch them.
No, I haven't heard of that so much. But the, like you have, you know, the lakes and ponds, and there would be many birds, swans, and these kind of things. They would stay. Generally, if the place is very nice here. Mouse.
What about circuses?
Circus. That I'm not sure. I never heard of them.
They're also in India, I know some circus.
Yeah, they're there.
From the West?
They may have. They may have taken, I think, the modern kind of circus, definitely. But, you know, you see guys with monkeys and guys with bears. I don't know if that's an old tradition. I know snakes, that's a...
Snake charmer,
that's a very common thing. I mean, I think that goes back, because it talks about the moving of the snake charmer moves and the snake moves with the... You know, they play that. They have that funny kind of reed instrument that they play. It's like a gourd, and then they have some kind of a reed. It's like a funny... like a cross between an oboe and a kazoo or something, you know. And they play that. And they always play that for the snake. But the snakes have no ears. But they can probably get some vibration off of it, you know, because it makes a heavy vibration. It's probably why they use that instrument. But they just move with the end of that instrument. I think it mentions that in the Bhagavatam or something.
A mantra, Shadi, is mantras and herbs can control the snake. The mantras and herbs, but an envious human being who cannot control them.
Yeah.
Or some verse like that.
Mm. There's also the thing of that they go in and they catch the snakes. Those people who keep the snakes, it's their profession is that somebody has a snake in their house or someplace. You call them and they have these mantras and ways that they can catch the snake. When they catch the snake, they break the teeth, the poisonous teeth. And then, but they have to keep the snakes and feed them. So when they catch a snake, you give some donation for having caught it. They use that money for, you know, taking care of the snakes and maintaining themselves. And then I guess they take the snakes out and show them to the kids and all that and try to collect a little money. So that seems to be an old, old tradition. You hear of special parks like connected with palaces that would have deers and other things in them. I don't know if those were enclosed or not. You get the idea that they might not be. It depends where the palace is. But generally, palaces were quite well enclosed. They must have had very big lands, and they would have special animals in that, especially deers and other things inside. But, you know, it was much more open kind of thing. Anything more on animals? Okay. Okay. Is it additional things on the altar? You may place standing or hanging ghee lamps on or around the altar. Although candles may be substituted, they are not considered pure or high class. There should be at least one ghee lamp near the pujari, on the left side of the altar, which should be kept burning throughout each artik. In a footnote, he says, traditional Pancharatrika temples have a lamp that is never allowed to go out, a kandadip. This fire is installed, such as a deity is installed, and all fire used in worship and cooking is taken from this lamp. A fire extinguisher or fire blanket should always be kept in the deity room, out of view, but easily accessible. Similarly, the kitchen should be equipped with a fire extinguisher or fire blanket.
But the candles is like pure beeswax?
I would think beeswax. He's probably talking about paraffin and that.
Those are considered pure?
Beeswax, I think, would be, because we use beeswax for... means beeswax is the Vedic blue tack.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. It means you hold on the conch eyes with beeswax. And
like what?
The conch shell eyes are kept on with beeswax and like that.
So they must be quite pure.
Yeah, so the beeswax, I think, is not a problem. Because honey is pure. So I'm sure the beeswax is pure.
That's the blue pack.
Huh? Yeah, yeah. You stick things on with that. So it's that'd be fine. Beeswax. But generally, most devotees aren't using beeswax candles. You know, they're just using paraffin or like that. The beeswax would be okay. But better than that is oil lamps. Like that. If you can't get an oil lamp or that, then the beeswax would be okay. But otherwise, then he's saying your regular candles. But just one should be very careful to always keep them away that you basically you should look at it that if the thing falls over within the distance of its height, you know, you should just see that there's nothing around that's burnable. I mean, you can't put a candle right next to something that's burnable because it may fall over. It may. Wind breezes blow, and cloth moves. I mean, one has to be very careful of these things. From this lamp, you can light the incense and lamps you offer to the Lord. Says if at all avoidable, fire used in worship should not come directly from matches or handheld lighters. It's always best, like it says, that there's always a lamp for the deities burning. So that means that there's always something there, that a lamp that has fire. So as best is a lamp, ghee lamp, oil lamp. If not, then a candle. And then you light your other things from that. Not that you get out the matchbox each time and light, you know, your incense and light your lamps and like that. You may do that in the beginning, though. Then, but other things after that should come from that lamp. It's considered nicer, more proper. Yes?
The ghee lamp that you used to offer to the deities, is okay to burn that first and then light the incense from that?
Can. just as long as it's the wicks are long enough that it won't be burnt out, you know, or won't be looking. Because the idea is in these lamps is then you have very fine little flames. So if by the time you finish the incense, it's already burned down the wicks and it's to the main ball, and so you got this big fire, then that's not so good. Then it's better to light the incense off another lamp, you know? It means there's a lamp separate from the artik paraphernalia.
But there isn't one.
You can, but then we should have bigger wicks. But generally, if the temple is, you know, regularly doing puja, you know, like a guru puja, daily guru puja, daily tulsi puja, daily artiks of the deities, then they can arrange some kind of lamp, you know, like that. So that's the proper standard, because that's one of the items. It's not that, well, we get it done by this way, you know. Mixing it together, well, it's just like, well, you know, we have to cook rice, we have to cook dal, we have to cook sabji, so we'll just throw it all together and make khichdi, you know. So it's easy, we've done the work, but it gives a different flavor. So the whole idea is the lamp that is there is one of the items. So the artik lamp is another item, the incense is another item, so three items are there. So if you get rid of the lamp and they just then use the ghee lamp as the standing lamp, then you've merged two items. You know? I mean, if you know the temple's so poor they can't afford it, you know, and all these things, you can consider these things. But it's not, we shouldn't not use it out of laziness or out of lack of, you know, not being, lack of understanding.
I think I can ask.
Have 2 minutes.
What's the idea of offering lamps to the Lord? I mean, it's like he likes that you offer lamps in circles.
What is it called? It's called Niranjana, and it's one of the kinds of what do you call it? Removing of inauspiciousness, creating auspiciousness is with the lamp.
Well, you create auspiciousness by...
It removes inauspicious things. It creates nice atmosphere. It's very good for the eyes to see fire, especially early in the morning. Ayurveda mentions that seeing fire early in the morning is very, very good for the eyes, you know? Very good for the eyes. I think it's very makes mind very peaceful.
What about the fire lamps? Why fire?
I think in fire they generally come in odd numbers, like that. 1, 5, 7, 9, 11, like this, like that. Generally, fires is always in odd numbers. All things to eat is generally in even numbers. So exactly why, I'm not sure. Maybe there's some planet thing, or you know, the nature of Agni. I'm not exactly sure on that. You know something on that, or?
A very small question.
But as we finish this?
Yeah.
Like that. I'm not sure. But it's called Niranjana. Just offering that, and you know, sometimes mustard seeds with neem leaves you show above the head, or different things. There's different ways of doing it. But we find in the worship there's many, many things are showed throughout the worship. There's a thing called Vandapanam, or Vandapana, I think Vandapanam. Yeah, Vandapanam. Where all kinds of auspicious things are shown. After just getting dressed and all that, they're shown. And then a little later, then the lamps are shown. And then another time, then a ghee is shown, or a kalasha with water, a pot with water is shown. And they come at different times in the puja.
Like I'm asking that. Also because to understand the mood. It's like when you offer an incense, what the mood? The mood you're offering, the smell?
Yeah, something. No? Like before, many times the incense, now where this is... We call it incense. It's called incense. I'm not sure if that's the but the technical word is dhūp. And so technically what we're offering, these are agarbattis. You know, they're sticks that where you put these on. Originally, the stick on which the masala was wrapped was this piece of agar tree, which has a very special fragrance. It itself was very, very fragrant. So this is one way of doing the agarbati. Was this with the masala hand rolled on them. Nowadays they use bamboo or some others. You know, some really good may have chandan like that. Before it was agar.
But you could do offer also some other type of incense.
But otherwise, generally you see in temples, in the old temples, is they have a special lamp. It looks like a big, huge camphor lamp. And they have coals inside. And then they have some, you know, kind of frankincense. Frankincense, you know, whatever it is, either frankincense itself or different other kinds of herbal mixes and that, according to seasons or like that availability. And then that'll be put on the lamp and that will be what's offered. So it creates a nice fragrance. Like that.
And then the lamp too.
So generally that lamp will be moved because as you move it, it creates air, you know, and then gets more smoke.
But the lamp is to create auspiciousness, is to remove inauspiciousness.
Yeah, the lamp is, from what I understand, that's what it's for.
So you actually circling, I mean, you're not really offering the lamp to the Lord.
It is, it's being offered, but it seems to have many kind of connotations, depending upon how it's being used, like receiving, like when Krishna comes back, then the gopis and Mother Yashoda go out with lamps to receive him, like that. So it's like a reception kind of thing also. It steps in a worship. It is a worship, it's a reception. It can be used for removing inauspiciousness or all that together. You know, it's like that kind of, it does all those kind of things. So it's a very pleasant. The main item actually in the artik is the lamp.
Oh.
That's actually the most prominent. Like that. In our system that we use, then we use a lot of other items. But we see it like a lot of times in Pancharatrik worships, then they just do a lot of lamps. It's only lamps. They do dup, and then they do tons of different kinds of lamps, you know, single lamps and camphor lamps, and ones with five wicks and ones with many wicks and different shapes, like Sudarshans or then different kinds of things, and then at the end, and they have this like Purnakumbha. It looks like a kalash. It looks like a water pot, but it's got a wick in the top. It's full of oil, and they'll show that at the end. You know, that means like the whole artik is complete, you know, because it's a Purnakumbha. So the Purnakumbha is shown, and then that's it.
You were saying that's
Pancharatrik temples.
Ours is not Pancharatrik.
Ours, it is. How you say? Such a small guy. It's Pancharatrik, but it seems to have. See, Pancharatrik is a mix of Tantric and Vedic. So it seems that this has more of a general kind of Tantric flavor. Yeah, because you find it more in North, you won't find it in South. Like that. So more and more things are offered, you know, the chamara and all these other kinds of things. They're nice. They're nice things that are there. So they're all bona fide. It's just how you put them together. So this particular is the way we accept and do. And you see that many of these things are it's more north. In North you'll find it more. Ours is probably one of the most elaborate of the artiques in variety of what's offered. Like that. Yeah, I guess we finished that part. Okay, we'll end here. Today is what, Friday? Yeah, okay. So we have tomorrow. Right? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare.